Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hey, everybody. We're back in the open, and I'm by myself today. Again, Teresa America is taking care of business. And today I have a guest with us, Kevin. Do you want to share with our audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So my name is Kevin Rushton. I am Program Manager of Digital Solutions at Mental Health America. I work mostly on our screening website, doing user experience design and content strategy and whatnot. My professional background is mostly in mental health treatment, specifically substance abuse treatment. I did a lot of psychoeducation and that kind of thing, some case management.
But personally, Kevin.
Personally, I'm all sorts of screwed up, and that is what led me into mental health, as it does with probably most people in the mental health field. So
many of us come into mental health because of our personal experiences. Today, we're totally going to talk about whether or not anxiety is different for men. So let's just dive right in.
So I didn't know what anxiety was. I mean, I guess I knew what it was as an emotion, but I didn't know what an anxiety disorder was until high school, or at least it wasn't like really in my awareness. The only mental illness I remember ever really like having any knowledge about or identifying with was depression. Basically, like everything that I experienced starting about when my parents divorced when I was six up through most of high school, everything I experienced was kind of just like filtered through the lens of depression because that was like the only mental illness that was like real. And I remember going through taking like a psychology class in high school and going through different types of disorders. And when we went through generalized anxiety disorder, I was looking at the symptoms on the board and I was like, oh, that makes so much more sense than like depression for a lot of what I've been going through. And I do struggle with depression as well, but depression kind of comes and goes and anxiety is pretty constant. Yeah, I just have like a lot of experience being really anxious about a lot of different things. Like generalized anxiety disorder tends to be you're just anxious about everything, and if there's nothing to be anxious about, you will make up something to be anxious about and just latch onto it.
Where do you think your anxiety comes from?
I mean, it comes from a lot of different places. Most recently, over the past few years, there's sort of been this like off and on thing with various providers that I've worked with where like I may or may not have ADHD. And so there's sort of this interplay between like, does my anxiety cause my concentration problems or do my concentration problems cause my anxiety? And either way, it's sort of this spiral where like, it's hard for me to concentrate on things. And so that means that I don't always like pay attention very well in conversation. So I'll like miss something and then somebody asks me a question and I'm like anxious because I don't know how to answer. And then I become afraid of having those conversations because I anticipate that happening again. So regardless of like which is the cause and which is the effect, that kind of thing is a big source of anxiety for me. I was raised in a very strict religious environment. And even within that religious environment, a very like restricted family life. And so I was just kind of generally taught that the world was a threatening place and that I should be afraid of things. I had a lot of trouble developing social skills in like middle school. So I kind of like developed this self-image of being like really awkward and that kind of set me up for a lifetime of social anxiety.
I totally relate to that. Feel like that could be like a whole nother dialogue, you know, about how childhood can be so brutal and being socially awkward as a child like haunts you as an adult.
Yeah. And I mean, I grew up in like a relatively progressive place. I grew up in a suburb of Seattle, which is like known for being really progressive and really like, I don't know, like the type of place where you would expect schools to handle things like mental health better than maybe like, you know, rather than like growing up in like rural Alabama or something. Like that's like the stereotype of it, right? Is that like, oh, Seattle's super progressive, so they're really good at everything. But like my teachers would like, I would like fall asleep in class or like cry in class for no reason, like totally unprovoked. And my teacher would just like pull me out in the hallway and be like, you need to grow up. And I'm like 10 years old at this point. So it's like nobody thought to like refer me to the school counselor or anything. So like, it just sort of reinforced this idea, which kind of ties into our theme today, actually, that like, as a boy, I was supposed to like not show emotion, and any display of emotion was interpreted as like a weakness rather than like a sign of some kind of underlying like emotional problem or anything going on at home. It was just like, oh, like you're a boy and you're in middle school, you shouldn't be crying.
These stories that we say and these phrases that we say about how people should be are so crushing. I feel like we're getting a little better about that, right?
I hope so. I mean, I haven't been in middle school for a long time, but so I don't have a lot of firsthand experience with that. But I feel like, at least in the media, it seems to be getting that way. But I also have sort of, I try not to be in too much of an echo chamber, but I do hang out with a lot of other people who have a lot of knowledge about mental health and are very open-minded and progressive and tend to be more understanding of mental health and less restrictive about things like gender roles. So it's hard to say like how much progress has been made as a society and how much I'm just an adult now and can make choices about who to surround myself with. Whereas before it was just like, you know, I was just kind of thrown into this environment. And
yeah, it is interesting because I think there is a component to be said about as a child, you're basically telling all the young listeners, like, things are going to get better. Whether it's because, you know, the stupid things people tell you, whether it's because you're young and they're not aware, or because maybe society gets better, that in the end, I think there's some hope that things can change and you don't have to be stuck with where you are at. And that's good. But let's talk about like your experience and your perception of anxiety as a man. How do you feel like it's different? Like, and we're going to be okay. So just to users, like we're going to just lean into the stereotypes. Okay. Like we know that it doesn't, and it shouldn't have to be this way, but the narratives and the things that we believe are born from society that tells us it was supposed to be this way. And then we're in this space because of it. So we're leaning in.
Yeah. And like, it kind of has to be that way. I think when you first suggested this as a topic, I was kind of like, I don't know if I want to talk about that because like, I don't know if I feel like my experience is like representative of like all men, not that anybody's experience would be, but like, I feel like I now, at least as an adult, in some ways I'm like very like male, like that's a very strong part of my identity. But in other ways, I was never really into like sports growing up, and I have never been like I've always been pressured from the outside to like conform to this like rigid idea of masculinity, but I've always kind of pushed back against it. And I feel like maybe more comfortable with my sexuality than a lot of like straight men are, things like that. And so like on some level, I almost want to feel like I'm like above like the issues of like being a man with anxiety. But the fact is that a lot of anxiety has come from just this outside pressure that becomes internal pressure to conform to stereotypes about like what it is like to be, like what it should be like to be a man. Like you should be, like you shouldn't have strong emotions, you shouldn't display those emotions, you should be athletic, you should be confident, you shouldn't have social anxiety.
I do hear this as a partner from my husband who says things like, I should work, I should be like the breadwinner. Sometimes they'll sneak in where he's like, oh, you're making more money, or I'm making more money. And I'm like, I get it. I get that that mattered, but that is that like so clearly a dude thing, you know, that you're supposed to be the head of the household. Like, what does that even mean? I'm also like Asian and Catholic, and we don't talk about like head of the household perspectives,
right?
Which is a very like white Christian thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's kind of an intersection between like your gender and your culture. And I'm no longer religious, but I was involved in conservative religious circles until I was in my mid-20s. So I went to a religious college, and there's a lot of pressure to like pick a major that's going to make you like enough money to support a family, and not just any family, like a family of like six kids with a stay-at-home wife. So like you're providing for what, eight people on one income, and you're pressured to select a career path that's going to support that. And so like I ended up majoring in psychology, but for a long time, I would like switch my major every semester. Like I was like, oh, I'm really interested in psychology. Oh, but like, it's not going to make me that much money. So like, I'll do medical school. And so I would take all these like physiology classes, and then I'd be like, I don't really know if I want to do that. So I'd go back to psychology, but I'd be like, it's just like not enough money. And I minored in visual art. I've always been very like creative and artistic. And that was something that was like, I would consider applying to be like a graphic design major or something. And even then I would choose graphic design over illustration because that's like more professional sounding and sounds more official. That was just like a career option that I like really didn't seriously consider. Like my mind would go there, but like I just wasn't open to even considering that because it was just like too risky. Like, well, if I'm going to support six kids and a wife who's going to stay at home all the time. I've always been like interested in like women who tend to be more ambitious and like also kind of buck stereotypes. But even then, like I still felt the pressure like, oh, like I'm likely to like marry into like what'll become a two person house, like a two income household. But just in case that doesn't like, I need to like be the rock that my family can rely on. And like everyone else can fall apart and I still need to have it all together.
That's super interesting. So clearly anxiety about expectations about what it means to be a man has affected your job choices. And then you talked about as a kid, it was about, you know, whether you were supposed to or allowed to show emotions. But one of the things I also think is interesting is you've tapped a little bit into expectations about relationships and dating. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that your anxiety is also around what it's supposed to be, what you're supposed to be in a relationship? Like, was that something too that you feel like is distinct about men and women and anxiety?
Yeah, I think so. It's pretty deeply ingrained that men are supposed to be more dominant and super confident and always like make the plans and have these elaborate displays of romance and things like that. And that you're supposed to be the one basically creating this experience for the person that you're going out with. Ugh. On the one hand, I kind of get it. Like, as I have left those conservative religious circles and I'm now dating women who are more like feminists and more open to other types of gender dynamics, that's still a factor and it still plays in. And I'm seeing now that for some people, for some women, we're expected to put on this makeup and look nice and have a perfect body. And there's expectations on women that are not placed on men. And so I want to emphasize that I don't think that this pressure on men is unique in the sense that it's a different type of pressure. Yeah. And the pressure to be dominant and take charge and make the plans and be the one who always does the asking out can be frustrating and can be a big source of anxiety for a lot of men.
You've said that word a couple times, dominance, and I don't think that women think about dominance. And then as you get older too, the dominance becomes an issue because if you're aware that you're not supposed to be dominant, then you have the anxiety of whether you're just being, you know, does that make sense? Like, oh, yeah, now I'm dominant. I was trained to be dominant and I'm not supposed to be dominant. So is everything dominant? Like, am I... And you're just, and like, I just see like the combination of the anxiety brain and I'm like, I'm a male feminist, but I'm dominant.
Yeah. And now there's sort of pressure from both sides where I feel pressure to be masculine, but also pressure to not be too dominant and to not take up too much space because I'm still going out with people who were raised with this idea of what men should be like. And they also feel ambivalent about that. You know, I'm attracted to this traditional masculinity, but also threatened by it. And it's just kind of a mess.
Yeah.
I think that there are a lot of unique ways that men experience anxiety. But I think that it's also important to acknowledge that the way that men are socialized to express their anxiety, we hurt ourselves by acting in certain ways, for example, being aggressive instead of showing vulnerability and trying to control everything in ways that are so, like, trying to control your world by enforcing these, like, rigid boundaries that you have. That hurts us, but ultimately we're not the main victims of that. I think that what happens with men's mental health is the way that we are taught to cope with it ends up hurting other people. And so it's important to acknowledge our own emotions and work through them, but it also is important to acknowledge the way that having a mental illness and experiencing this pressure doesn't excuse toxic behavior.
Yeah. A lot of men are taught that being aggressive is not necessarily a bad thing. And so if you're anxious, you turn a lot of that energy into just aggressive, angry behavior. But it's interesting to me because even as a woman, America and I talk all the time about how anger is the easiest emotion for us to tap into. Because I think in America, it's just an acceptable form of emotion. Like, we don't like to tolerate any emotion except anger. Anger is okay. Or something like that too, right? So then on both sides, like, are we all just angry, anxious people all the time? Something I think about. What about just Kevin as a person? Like, if I asked you, just regardless of being a man or not, Kevin as a person, when you think of your anxiety, what does it look like?
For me, it mostly is displayed internally. I kind of turn inwards and get caught in these spirals of negative thinking where I want to intellectualize my way out of things, which is also kind of, that also does tie into masculinity, because one of those stereotypes that it's that, like, men don't have emotions, they're logical. And so I'm supposed to, like, logic my way out of all my problems. So I feel anxious, and then I try to analyze why I feel anxious, which isn't a bad thing. That's part of therapy, is, you know, looking at your thoughts and analyzing them, but it can definitely be taken to an extreme. And I often will do that where I'm looking at the thoughts that I'm having and logically trying to think about where they came from and what I can do with them, but ignoring the emotion that goes along with it. So I often have trouble identifying my emotions. There's a lot of, like, escapism from things like procrastinating tasks that I feel anxious about, to more extreme forms of escapism. Like, I played a lot of video games as a kid because I didn't have a lot of freedom, and my home was kind of a traumatic place, and that was a way to escape by going into this fantasy world where you're completely in control, and, you know, the scenario is set up so that you're constantly rewarded and your competence is constantly reinforced. I remember reading something about how boys like to play video games, especially single player ones, because your failures are private. Nobody else sees how incompetent you are. And they're also, you know, they're designed for you to win and to make you feel competent and powerful. And so you can kind of play out this fantasy of not being vulnerable.
Yeah. Because you talked about confidence and failure too. Mm-hmm. And maybe boys and men also feel failure harder or differently than women. You know, you're trained to believe that men are supposed to succeed. And that's so interesting, that what you're saying about video games. If you're speaking to a young man or a boy, like, how would you tell them the difference between when gaming is healthy and acceptable and okay versus, you know, oh, I realize this is, as a person and a man or person, Kevin, like, how did you realize that that wasn't necessarily a good coping skill?
I think just when I got to adulthood and just found myself existing as an adult with very few real world skills. I didn't know how to put gas in a car. I didn't know how to grocery shop for myself. I think that just limiting the amount of time, or not even necessarily limiting, because I think that it can sometimes be more productive. If you're trying to change your diet, for example, instead of saying, oh, I shouldn't be eating this thing, say, I should be eating more of this other thing. And so I don't even necessarily know that saying, oh, I can't play video games so much is really healthy, because it's like, then you just are giving yourself another thing to be anxious about. Oh, I'm doing this too much.
Yeah.
But balancing it out with other interests and hobbies and just sort of analyzing, am I playing this because it's fun? Am I playing it because I can't think of anything better to do? Am I playing it because I'm afraid to do homework that I might not be good at, or because I'm afraid to go hang out with friends that I am worried about embarrassing myself in front of? And just sort of being aware of what your motivations are. I think also it's very easy to play online games with strangers and feel like you're socializing. And I think that if you're going to play games with other people whenever possible, have it be people that you know personally, so that it becomes a social experience and not just a private experience where you can sort of justify to yourself that, oh, I'm playing with other people, so it's socializing. But you don't know those people. You're not interacting with those people. You maybe have like messages back and forth that are mostly just trash talking, and that's not really fostering social development. I do think that things like games, shows, movies, comics, whatever, fandoms can be a big source of support for a lot of people, going to conventions and things. I think just finding ways to take something that could be isolating and make it into a social activity, a genuine social activity.
Oh, there's so much good stuff there. How did you break free? Like, what worked for you on how to break free of these stupid thoughts that you think are especially tied to being a male?
I don't know if I would say that I have broken free. You're never really broken free. These are things that I was raised to believe. They were constantly reinforced at home, at school, at church, and every environment I went to, there was maybe different versions of masculinity, but it was always very restrictive. You have to act this way. You have to look this way. You have to do these certain things. And I think that it's important to just realize that these things are going to shape you, whether you like it or not, in some form or another forever. And you can react against them. You can accept them and go along with it. But you can't fully really escape it, I don't think.
That's so interesting, because I do sometimes think there are some kinds of stupid thoughts where we're trapped in them. And I do need to break free, because it's holding me hostage in your life. Like, it's holding you back. And do you need to break up with it? Do you need to cut it off? But you're saying maybe there are some kinds of thoughts, like about your gender, that you can't break free from because it's so everywhere all the time. Is that kind of what you're saying? Like, you can't totally cut yourself off from it, because you will always be a male. You identify as a male, so you will always be a male and a male in this society, and you can't cut it off.
Yeah, I'm always going to be seen that way. People are always going to project things onto me. I'm always going to be, I have always worked in workplaces that are majority female, and I am always going to be asked to figure out how the new projector works. It's just going to happen. I'm going to be in a meeting and some woman is going to be saying something over and over again, and people are going to be ignoring it, and I'm going to repeat the exact same thing, and people are going to suddenly listen. And that's something that I wish wasn't the case, but pretending that it's not the case is not going to solve the problem. So, I mean, I can be aware of those things and I can change my behavior accordingly, but I think that so there's two thoughts that I have, and one of them is that you can't fully break free from some of these things, but you can definitely lessen their influence on you. So, for example, moving into a career path that is largely female has sort of reduced the amount of pressure on me to act masculine. I mean, like I said, I'll get asked to figure out how the projector works, but I'm not going to be, my career advancement is not going to be dependent on knowing sports facts or being good at golf or things like that. I never, never going to have to worry about that kind of thing in this career path. I think just surrounding yourself with people who reinforce the good things about you and are less likely to put pressure on you. If somebody is pressuring you to act in a way that's toxic to yourself or to someone else, then cut them off. And if you can't cut them off, reduce the amount of time that you spend with them.
My husband still talks about how this is hard, though. Like, we always talk about how much he wants to find other male friends who will hug him and let him cry with them. And I'm sure even as he says those words out loud, that he feels shame that he would even need that. I can tell that it's hard for him to even say to me as his wife that he needs a space to cry, you know? So even at 40, he's still undoing these really trained up ideas. And then it's the most difficult to find friends where he can be his full self and show emotions and hug someone without doing a bro hug.
Right. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because I do think that having good, supportive male friends is really important. I, to this day, have a hard time making male friends. I have a hard time expressing vulnerability to other men that, hey, I would like to be friends with you. I would like to spend more time with you. That still feels weird to me. I tend to not trust men very much. It's just easier for me to be friends with women. But there's a couple problems. One, I mean, men, we all kind of go through the same pressure, and so we understand each other on a level that women don't. Women see this pressure, but they experience it mainly in the way that it pressures men to victimize women, and that changes their relationship with it. And they might not see some of the internal things that go on. The other issue is just that there's a tendency for men to rely on the emotional labor of women to deal with their emotions. So, like, if I have a bunch of female friends and, like, I'm going to go and whine to them about all of my feelings, and they're socialized to be supportive and not to necessarily, like, push back against that. And so it's very easy to, like, take advantage of women in your life. And so it's important to make sure that you're getting some of your emotional support from male friends. I think, I don't know, there's sort of a trick to it. You, rather than just going in and, hey, are you guys going to support, are you guys my best friends? Or, you know, you can kind of joke about it, or, like, drop hints about mental health and see how they react. That's kind of how I tend to go about it, to sort of see, like, is this somebody that I can open up to, or is this somebody that I just leave on the acquaintance level? The other thing that came up when we were talking about, you know, not being able to escape it, we were talking about masculinity and that pressure from society, but that also applies to anxiety itself. Or one of the biggest breakthroughs in treating my anxiety was when a therapist explained to me that my anxiety might never completely go away. And in fact, anxiety is a really useful emotion. It's what motivates people to do things, to care about things. So it's not possible or necessarily desirable to completely eliminate anxiety in your life. And I think that when anxiety is overpowering and really gets in the way of your life, it's easy to see that as the goal and to desire that. I don't know, just a better way of looking at it is to change your relationship with anxiety so that you see anxiety as a tool, a source of information. When you feel anxious, you stop and you think, what is my anxiety trying to tell me? And then you think, okay, what can I do about this? And what is beyond my control? You do whatever you can about it and you let go of the rest. And that's easier said than done, but that's essentially what the process of overcoming anxiety looks like.
I think that I found that it's really helpful for me as a wife to know about what the expectations are that my husband carries, because he brings that to the table in a relationship and you can't undo that. So it's useful for me to see them. And the habit of creating a space for us in a relationship, either with my friends or with my partner, to have a habit of talking about this all the time helps us check in on, like, a lot of assumptions, and they pile on. Cause at first it's like, oh, what it means to be a person and a male and a female and a parent, a father, a mother, a wife, a husband, blah, blah, blah. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we hope you all keep fighting in the open. Until next time.